Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli, the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. Now, please join me in welcoming my co-host, a man who does not have swine flu, and neither do I, by the way, Rick Hess.
Mike. So, Mike, did you really get checked up for swine flu?
Well, you know, I've had this bad cold thing that at times has felt a little bit flu-like for about a week. And so, yes, I went in and got checked out. And in fact, I was in the waiting room in the doctor's office. And because I had a cough, they gave me a mask. And I was the only one in there with a mask. And I felt the glare of my peers. Thinking, is he one of them?
Our vice president would have told people to beat you to death with large sticks.
That's right. I know. And to get to the doctor's appointment, I did not take the metro because of our vice president's comments. But you know what? Look, I mean, everything they're saying now is that this is not that much more dangerous than the normal flu.
Do you know how many people die a year from the flu?
They say 36,000.
36,000. And we're spazzing out over a couple hundred more. We're not even talking about, you know, a standard deviation.
Yeah.
Craziness. Craziness, man.
Standard deviation. Why did you have to go there with that? You're trying to make the rest of us feel stupid.
That's right. I mean, I just don't understand. I want to see Biden go on and say, you know, when you see somebody in a mask, go find a rake and beat them until they lay inert. Then you'll know you're safe. How funny would that be as a PSA?
That's great, Rick. That's just great. Well, unfortunately, we don't have more time for Rick's bad ideas, instigating riots.
Oh, I want a new show section.
If we were under the purview of the FCC, I'm not sure that I think we'd be in a lot of trouble. Okay, well, we've got a lot to cover. We're going to play Bart and the Gadfly. We're going to hear our research minute. We're going to rate that reform. Let's get going, Christina.
Topic one, the Texas legislature is debating a major overhaul to the Lone Star State's accountability system. Most notably, the new measure would lessen the importance of the annual test and average test scores over 3 years instead of just one. Quote, the tax was meant to be diagnostic, not high stakes, unquote, explained one lawmaker. What should we make of this?
Michael J.
I mean, so here we have the birthplace of school accountability in many ways. You know, having some pretty fundamental overhauls of its system. And I think that the lesson here is, as you've argued, Rick, we have a new stupid in education that, you know, uses tests in pretty silly ways and puts too much weight on just reading and math. And, you know, there's starting to be a backlash. And hopefully out of this will be some productive changes that will make the system more rational.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. I mean, I think, you know, is it right to smooth these over 3 years? It's, you know, I think it's one of those how many angels on the head of a pin questions. I don't know. It depends. Depends what you're trying to use the data for. Depends how large your end size is at the school. Depends what your attrition is. But the reality is that, you know, despite the former Secretaries of Education's kind of drum-banging op-ed in the Post the other day, the reality is that the folks who pushed accountability pushed it too hard and too carelessly and too incautiously, and now what they're reaping is this pushback. And what we need is accountability that's not only tough, but also smart.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll find our way there.
All right. Now, let's be fair. I mean, I don't know if it's fair to say that people who pushed accountability did it wrong. I mean, you know, when you're in politics, the politics is the art of the possible, and you get done what you can get done. And we've learned some things. I mean, you know, some of these ideas seem to make sense at the time, and now we've refined them. Technology's gotten better. But that's it. Let's talk about Secretary Margaret Spelling's op-ed in the Washington Post, where she claims that the long-term trend results show tremendous results for No Child Left Behind. What she fails to point out is that the big gains came from, 1999 to 2004? In other words, pretty much before No Child Left Behind.
I like the way she talked about the decade of NCLB.
Yeah.
NCLB signed into law January 2002, but the decade of NCLB starts with the 99.
I think
data.
What she thinks is the moment that George Bush started talking about the soft bigotry of low expectations on the campaign trail in the late 90s, boom, all of a sudden teachers in low-performing schools nationwide got their act together. All right, Christina, next topic.
Boston is investigating how to bring the high-profile and wildly successful Harlem Children's Zone to Beantown. But the focus so far has been on the program's social components, like healthcare and parenting classes, instead of on the equally legendary academic rigor. To boot, Obama's a big fan, promising money for nationwide promise zones based on the Harlem Children's Zone model. Should we be concerned that the focus has fallen away from achievement?
I guess just one clarifying question. How confident are we in Boston that they're really dumping the emphasis on achievement? Is this pretty agreed upon, or Is this, you know, a skeptic's take on what they're doing in Boston?
Rick, I just answered the questions here. No, this is taken from a newspaper article that certainly implied that that the focus was on the outside of school parts of the
program. Because, I mean, to the extent that that's the case, I mean, right, this is the mistake we always make, right? When people want to emulate, Kip's five pillars, it's not like they're that tricky, but they're tricky to actually do competently. So people want, they do the uniforms and they do the shirts inside out or something, and they don't do any of the hard stuff. And I mean, that's pretty much our standard strategy for school reform. So I wouldn't be surprised if people just go ahead and do the easy stuff that costs money and none of the hard stuff that requires changing adult behavior.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, the Promise Zone idea, you know, which was now made pretty famous in Paul Tough's book, the New York Times editor who wrote about Jeffrey Canada's efforts in New York City, you know, is appealing to lots of people in the broader, bolder mindset who say, well, schools alone can't make a difference. You've got to have all these other social supports, and you've got to think about how they connect together and one and all. But, you know, at the heart of it, Jeffrey Canada said, look, I need to make sure we've got good schools. And he quickly figured out that along with the help of Joel Klein, that the New York public schools weren't going to be the way to get that done. And so he went to do the charter school route in a very traditional back to basics model. You know, you've got to have that piece, too, if you're going to make this whole thing work.
Yeah. And, I mean, so at the end of the day, the challenge here is that everybody wants to talk a big game and then do the parts that require the least difficulty.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
All right. Yeah, Rick, you said that once before.
Hey, it's an important point.
But let me
want to make it twice, baby.
Excuse me.
McCoffee.
All right.
Coffee
again,
McCoffer.
It's not swine flu, I promise. But let me, you know, both of us saw Jeffrey Canada speak a few weeks ago at a forum. And I have to say, A, very good looking guy. Mm-hmm. B, very good speaker.
Mm-hmm.
Going to be really pushing the likes of us off of these panels. If they get, you know, real live people doing real live things, getting results.
Oof.
It's kind of scary. All right, Christina, topic number three.
So you do your best to keep them down, don't you?
Well, I just, there's a role for us policy wonks too, Rick. Don't forget about us.
The legendary difficulty of firing a tenured teacher remains unmatched. Recently, the LA Times wrote an expose of this system in their hometown. These teachers are making fun of students' attempted suicides, letting all hell break loose in their classrooms, and keeping vials of cocaine in their desks. But with all the legal hurdles, appeal processes, and the cost of both, it doesn't look like any of them will ever be fired. Now, top LA officials are calling for a system overhaul. The union is balking, and teachers claim they're simply being victimized. What would an effective dismissal system actually look like?
You're caught with a vial of coke in your desk, you're fired.
I mean, that seems pretty straightforward, right?
I'm a simple guy, man.
So Rick, tell us this. I mean, isn't it true there have been rumors that there were some people let go from the American Enterprise Institute amidst this economic downturn? I mean, you know, if a free market think tank can let go of people, you know, for cause, why can't big city education bureaucracies?
You would think. It's funny. I remember in Texas, which, of course, is not a collective bargaining state, I remember Kathy Mintzberg telling me a story several years ago. They found a teacher with porn on her classroom computer. It took them 11 months to actually try to turn it in. They were paying her the whole time. I mean, right, the reality here is that it's a nightmare to do this. To actually remove people who deserve to be removed. And the fault lies on both sides, right? All of these contracts and protections have been agreed to by folks on the district side.
But come on. These are district on the district side, but these districts are run by school boards. They're largely elected by teacher unions.
By teacher unions, exactly.
I mean, let's be careful.
And so, no, well, bring it, baby. Bring it.
Yeah. Mr. Apologist.
Therefore, you know, what we really need is not just to pursue them aggressively. If you remember, Caprice Young's school board in L.A. tried to fire about 400 or 500 teachers about 6 years ago, about the worst 1% of L.A. teachers. They started with 400 or 500. They wound up, I think, terminating one at the end of the process, and it caused a lot of political turmoil and cost a lot of money. So the reality is we don't just need to change the rules of the ground. We don't just need to go after this stuff aggressively, but districts need to put rules in place where aggressive superintendents and aggressive principals have a good chance of actually removing the people they need to remove.
Look, I think that we've made this argument the wrong way. We usually argue about principal autonomy, and I think that's solid. However, I think the way that you really get at this is saying, look, teachers do not want to work in schools where quality doesn't matter, and where they have to work next to teachers who are terrible. And so if we want to recruit great people, you know, we've got to be able to say to teachers, look, if there's somebody in your school who's doing a terrible job, we're going to find a way to remove them. And that is all the time we have for Pardon the Gadfly. It is now time for our Research Minute. What's up, Amber?
How you doing?
I'm well. I want you to make sure that you tell your mother that I do not have the swine flu. I know she's
will
worried.
Tell her that.
All right. Oh.
And I've been washing my
hands.
Has
your mom met Mike?
She called me. Yes, she's met Mike. But she called me last night to make sure I've been washing my hands a lot.
What'd you think of Mrs. Winkler?
She's lovely. She's a lovely woman.
Give her a shout out. You want to give her a shout out?
She got to meet Checker, too. Shout out for Amber's mom.
She'll have to listen now.
So what's up, Ams?
Sometimes. Can I just tell you, this is a side note, but I was in the restroom at our National Standards Conference today, and I was talking to this woman at the sink.
Too much information.
Well, I'm just saying, two women behind me overheard me talking to the woman at the sink beside me and realized I was the Research Minute woman. How cool is that?
By my accent, yes.
Wow, she's a star.
Amber, I'm not a star, but I think it's so funny that people recognize you by your voice.
Now it's stretching to the Research 4 minutes, little by little.
That's right. I know, Amber. All right. Well,
that's Southern accent.
Okay, you got 20 seconds left.
All right.
And it used to be a stronger Southern accent, I will say.
I'm losing it.
It's not. It's not as rich and tobacco laden as it once was.
It's just like your Yiddish accent. You can barely hear it anymore.
I know.
Okay.
All right. Anyway.
Oy vey. Okay.
We all know that the quality of local school influences residential choices of parents and even impacts housing prices. So this week we have a study that was released actually a couple weeks ago by the School Choice Demonstration Project out of the University of Arkansas that examined the relationship between home prices and the quality of nearby schools in Milwaukee, which we know is a city rich with public and private school choice, including open enrollment policies. Despite having no legal school attendance balance, boundaries, analyst Marcus Winters finds a significant positive relationship between average test scores of the nearest elementary school and home prices. Specifically, he finds a 1% increase in average math scores for the closest elementary public school tends to increase a home's price by about 1.35%. It's important to know that the study has numerous limitations, including it uses fairly short-term data on housing prices, plus its findings may be due to unobserved differences in neighborhoods and homes that the study couldn't measure, like maybe a neighborhood is nestled in a really cool restaurant district. Still, it doesn't appear that the robust school choice environment in Milwaukee has altered residential segregation by income.
Interesting. Although it's hard to really know that for sure, right? Because do we know what this looks like in other cities that have less school choice?
We don't. But I mean, there's kind of a growing body of research around housing prices and school quality. And actually, a couple studies, Figlio, I think, did the study about this, and it wasn't as big of a finding as this one. This one was a little more robust, but it also had, I think, more limitations.
Yeah, now this stuff goes back to the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Old school.
Lots of stuff.
what does that mean?
These findings, man. Body of research findings showing that houses cost more when they're by good schools.
But the question is, you know, does having more school choice take away some of that link?
In theory, but not so much in Milwaukee.
I mean, all right.
Not so much.
I mean, I still think parents are willing to pay a premium to be near a school of higher quality, and they don't want their children to have to travel too far and all that good
stuff. I talked to friends, you know, I have a lot of friends who are thinking about this right now in the D.C. area. And, you know, people think about charter schools in D.C. as being a real possibility, but they know that it involves a lottery for the good schools. And so how much of a risk are you willing to take that, you know, if a kid doesn't get into the lottery, then what? If you live in a neighborhood with a bad local public school, you know, as somebody said at our conference today, you're hosed.
Mm-hmm. Who said that? Who said this?
Dave Coleman.
Nice, Dave.
He was good.
Got a big chuckle.
The other thing is, it's a little bit like buying next to us, right? It's why houses cost more by Metro, by subways, that, you know, it's not going anywhere. And you buy, you know, bus routes don't add as much value to nearby houses as Metro does, as a subway does. Because you're buying, even if you don't ride the subway, you know, when you go to sell it, that it's an easy thing to score. And good schools are much the same way.
And yet houses on the highway don't seem to go for as much money as other houses.
Shocking.
Interesting.
Shocking.
Okay. Whole new line of inquiry for you, babe.
Okay, Amber, so tell us, what's the song to go along with this finding?
The song, since we're talking about being able to afford a sweet home near a quality school, we have Sweet Home Alabama by Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Sweet Home Alabama.
So, you know, a little funny, too, though, that since I think Alabama probably has the least amount of school choices in the state and country. But we'll now focus on the Alabama part. There.
Skynyrd, baby. Skynyrd.
Skynyrd. Do you think that song is slightly racist?
Nah, man, I love that song.
It's kind of a state's rights.
Did you ever see Skynyrd?
What do you mean, like live?
Yeah.
Rick, I was born in 1973. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
You're dating yourself, Rick.
Yeah.
Skynyrd, baby.
Have you seen Skynyrd live?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Skynyrd.
Skynyrd. I've seen haircuts of Rick back from those days, too. Is that during your Flock of Seagulls days?
No, Skynyrd is... That was
Flock
a funny haircut, man.
Flock of Seagulls is
80s. Yeah. Yes. Well, fair enough. Okay, Stafford, what are we rating today?
Give me back my bullets, man.
All right, Stafford, I always forget that we've got this new jazzy
tune. I know.
Tune.
You always jump the gun, too.
I know. And it's kind of a Mexican thing for this week where we've got Cinco de Mayo. This is very
and nice. Swine flu.
And the swine flu. Do you think that had an impact on their celebrations? I guess it did.
So before I get started, actually, I wasn't going to say anything, but Amber brought up her restroom story. And I'd like to say that I had someone come up to me today also and ask me if I was right that reform.
Ah, that's beautiful.
She's a big fan.
You've
Shout
got
out.
Groupies.
Shout out.
You've got groupies.
Okay. Moving right along. So every teacher, parent, or principal knows that teenagers are like hormone-charged missiles, seeking each other out with a laser-like focus that we'd only wish they'd devote equally to their studies. So here's a shocker. Two students at Franklin County High School in Kentucky were caught making out in the bathroom. Doesn't seem newsworthy, right? Well, the problem is that the two students happen to be both girls. Okay, maybe a little bit more newsworthy than the football captain and the head cheerleader, but certainly not deserving of this response. Rick, stop it. I'm going to tell Jolene on you. The school has allegedly told teachers not to let homosexual students leave class to use the restroom together.
Whoa.
Wow. On a scale of one to dumb, this is beyond stupid. Drum roll, ladies and gentlemen, for I bestow upon you the accursed double F. First of all, what is the real problem here? Is it that students are making out in the bathroom? Or is it that gay students are making out in the bathroom? Because if it's the former, this solution certainly doesn't solve the problem since there's still the library, the bleachers, and all those student cars in the parking lot. But if it's the latter, then we have this little problem called the Constitution. See, there's this amendment about discrimination, and unfortunately for Franklin County High School, it happens to make this alleged policy illegal. You can't tell someone they can't answer nature's call because of their sexual orientation. I'm also left wondering a few things. How does the teacher know and or prove that two of her students are gay? What is the likelihood that there are two homosexual students in one classroom? And how does this policy prevent students batting for the same team in different classrooms from planning and executing an illicit bathroom rendezvous?
With the text message.
With the text.
Then you've got added disruption.
Bottom line, this is on my top five worst reforms ever. Congratulations, Franklin County High School, for coming up with a reform that is not only dumb, but solves nothing and is also bigoted.
Oh, wow. She brought it.
Brought it. Brought the heat, man. I wish Cooner was here for that.
I don't know. Cooner
might, pink slips, man.
Cooner might come down in a little differently.
Yeah, but they'd both be pink slipping like crazy. I'll tell you what.
I don't know, Stafford. I think I agree with you wholeheartedly in this one. This is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
But I mean, I don't know how you really solve the problem of teenagers making out.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, you can't.
Is it
really a problem?
Well, I mean, that's the other question. I mean, is this something
better sex ed? Maybe.
I mean. There is a question, right? If would we rather have them making out on school grounds rather than like climbing off somewhere and going in poison ivy and getting swine flu?
I don't think you can get swine flu
from poison ivy.
Poison ivy.
What about?
But in the vicinity, poison ivy can be around
swine. Oh. Although a lot of people that got sick from swine flu had underlying medical conditions.
That's what I'm talking about.
I see. So the poison ivy could leave you more susceptible to swine flu.
You know what I'm saying? I'm saying you get out into the bramble. And all kinds of stuff can happen.
Bramble.
All kinds of stuff can happen, man.
Well, thank you, Stafford. That was very...
illuminating.
Illuminating. Thank you for that word. So that was good, but we're out of time. So why don't we say our farewells, and until next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute's Education Gadfly Show at edexcellence.net, signing off.